Earlier this year, we chatted with the writer and critic Theodore Joyer, who lives in San Francisco. And his work appears in places like the Los Angeles Review of Books. And he's writing a book on the evolving place of arts and food in 21st century culture. The topic then with him was the evil uses that classical music is put to in media. And we received a lot of reaction to that. Theodore makes an unusual argument in the latest edition of American Scholar. He says that Instagramming has replaced praying in modern society, in one important respect at least. Theodore, nice to talk to you again.
Pleasure to talk to you as well, Jim.
This is to do with the obsession with Instagramming our food, yes?
Yeah. Instagramming has really evolved from a niche hobby into a real generational habit in the last 5 years. It's sort of taken fire as a kind of cornerstone of kind of millennial online identity.
There is science that suggests that photographing your food and putting it out there actually makes it taste better for yourself, yeah?
Yeah, as funny as it is, there's a study from the Journal of Consumer Marketing that found taking a picture of food before consumption actually improves the taste and the savoring, but only for indulgent foods. But for healthy foods, that effect only works when you know other healthy people are eating along with you. So there's something that community, not quinoa, is the key ingredient, apparently.
I also read research out of the Brigham Young University School of Management suggesting that when other people see the pictures of your food on Insta, it makes them less satisfied with what they eat. And I don't know the truth of all this, but you're doing them a disservice.
Quite possibly. I mean, I think that we just haven't had a lot of research or kind of public conversation about the ways that Instagram and these online platforms really enrich or maybe hurt our kind of the way we interact with the world. So that's kind of what I'm hoping to get into.
In our restaurants now in New Zealand, people are certainly on their phones a lot, some of them. You know, you see entire tables not talking to one another between courses. But can you give us an idea of the size of Instagram food posting? It's reached gluttonous proportions.
Indeed. Just to give you a sense for Instagram overall, there are 95 million posts a day and 1 billion users monthly, active monthly users. And of that, 69% of millennials photograph their food. And food pictures leapt from 800,000 to 183 million from 2013 to 2015. And to give you a sense of how big it's gotten, just since I've written this article, the hashtag food has gone from 250 million posts to 347 million posts when I checked earlier today. So it's on fire.
Good Lord, it's very hard to argue with those statistics. That's amazing. Okay. You've convinced us. We hear expressions like food porn and so on. Why do you detect prayer and not, you know, porn or puffery?
Well, you know, it's easy to be cynical when you see some of these photos, but I feel like I detect a different yearning in them. And there's certain types of photos, which it's not really about gluttony. It's not really about self-presentation. It's about appreciation and kind of trying to connect with something a little bit bigger than yourself. And that's when I got this odd connection to maybe this is kind of similar to saying grace before a meal.
Okay, the saying of grace. Food pics on Instagram have replaced that. And you formed this opinion while eating out with other people?
Yeah, it's a saying called the phone eats first. And when you go to a restaurant, whenever the dish hits the table, before you can reach for it, if I reach for my fork, I'll be batted away because the phone eats first. And it was just like my childhood tables when my dad would say, can't have a bite of that before we say our grace. And those are the moments when it really clicks. I'm like, oh, it's a similar thing.
The phone eats first. Oh, that's fantastic. So, okay, we're getting the sense of your argument. If Instagramming food has replaced mealtime prayer in that way, it must mean that this has become a transcendent sort of social medium instead of just a site that people go onto to show off. You're making a case for kind of digital metaphysics.
Well, maybe we'll say the prelude to the overture of a prologue of digital metaphysics, because I'm not a metaphysicist myself. But, you know, I do think that a critic's job is to open up new avenues of meaning for society, new ways to look for meaning and insight in people's lives. And I think that Instagram has the potential to do that for people. There's so many, you know, when you're connecting with millions of people online, and as more and more of our life is lived through screens, I think that it's inevitable that people will look for some of those things in Instagram or the same places that they might have looked for in churches or other places at different moments in history.
Yeah, that's really interesting. But there is no sanctity, no redemption online.
That's a question for the theologians. Maybe some dietitians would disagree with the redemption. But it really is about... it's really about how people are looking for something bigger, some sort of transcendence, something bigger than themselves in the minute. And more, I think that people are looking for it just in sharing a picture up in the internet.
Okay. And you see this in the language used, and I think I'm using one of your examples, the language used around, for example, the power of kiwi fruit.
Yeah, I'm just going to read a little snippet of a Instagram post that really, I think, shows this. It's from a nutritionist called Naturally Nina, and it says, "I remember just a couple years ago, eating brought me only emotions of fear, guilt, and disgust for me. I avoided it as much as I possibly could, and every bite was a struggle. For me, the key to gaining a much healthier relationship with food was to start appreciating food and all it does for me and my body. It gives me energy, provides me my cells with fuel, keeps my hair, skin, and nails healthy. It keeps me alive." And and this is a picture of a bowl of kiwi fruit. It's like going to like a prayer meeting or a revival. So yeah, it felt that something else has to be going on here.
It does sound like revival prayer meeting type talk from Nina. So our religion, I'm trying not to enlarge this too much, but our religion now is the body beautiful, untrammeled by impure ingestions.
Maybe for some people. But for me, I don't know if I can go quite that far, but I definitely do think that, you know, religions and spirituality, people like having some physical manifestation of it. That's why we have communion. That's why we have so many aspects of so many religious rituals are based around eating and meals. Food just seems like is always kind of an accompanying part.
It's a dead end, though, to return to that earlier point. I mean, you can have as many secular visions of perfection as you like, but they all end up with us getting older and uglier and eventually having difficulty chewing, and nobody wants to look at our Instagram pictures then.
Of course. I mean, I'm not seeing Kiwi Instagrams will succeed where, you know, Jesus Christ fails. But I am. But, you know, I think the key point to look here is that, you know, the forms of religious life evolve with technology. And so in the way that look how TV launched televangelism. And I think we just don't quite know how the internet and social media is going to change the way that we look for spiritual kind of meaning in our lives across society. It's all about that search that I think matters most.
Yeah, that is your macrocosmic point, really. We still think of, well, I don't know, I'm speaking from a certain age band, but we still think of Instagram as an ephemeral medium. You reckon we don't appreciate its enormous role in the world now?
Well, yeah, I think it's easy for older folks, including myself as a 30-year-old millennial, to kind of overlook the importance of Instagram, because it's particularly important for young people. It's something there are startling statistics about how like 80 to 90% of like 18 to 24-year-olds use Instagram. And so it's just, this is the medium through which people connect and create meaning in their lives. And while it is ephemeral in this other way, it's just always present. It is someone's most visible platform for saying who they are for a lot of younger people. And so I think that it's important for, even though I kind of, like you, I think, look at some of these Instagram posts and kind of think it's a bit silly, so many people find so much meaning in it. And that's why I kind of tried to take off my cynical hat when writing this essay and say, I'm going to actually try to be sincere for a bit.
Okay. What makes the mechanics, because you go into this aspect, what makes the mechanics of Instagram different from, say, Twitter or Facebook or the other food photo websites?
I think the key thing is that it's a visual medium and it has a sharing mechanics that allows it to share beyond your immediate friend group. So it has a visual medium unlike Twitter. And I think that Twitter's, which makes it less divisive, it's less about creating arguments, but more about appreciating some, iconic image. And it has sharing mechanics. So it reaches beyond your immediate group of private friends, but connects you to, potentially a global network of, of kale enthusiasts like yourself. So it's really able to create like these identity groups that just never could exist otherwise around these very niche foods.
You're kind of describing it not just as a force for fetish, which is maybe what some of us have hitherto thought, but quite a force for good as well.
Well, I think it's a force for whatever we choose to make it. And that's one of the great interesting things that technology is neutral. It's about how we use it.
I know you're talking about sociology, not theology, but what you're saying really is that a huge worldwide audience is providing other people with validation. I eat well, therefore I am well, and so on. Is that it?
Yeah, I think that's a good way to it's a good way to put it, is that it's really about building a this kind of this huge network of people who affirm you in a way that's in a funny way. It's like your prayers are actually answered on Instagram every time you post, getting the 100 likes or all the kind of reassuring comments can really be powerful for people.
And last question, where will this lead, do you think? You're kind of hinting, interestingly, at the potential and the changing potential for social media, or especially Insta. Where will it lead?
That's the question. I can't say where it's going to lead, but it's really about us to think about the kinds of emotions and discussions and values we want to use our social media channels and kind of mechanics to promote. Because we're obviously also aware of how social media can create division and polarization and anger and hate in the world. But those same mechanics could also create other things. And so I wish I could tell you for sure where it's going to lead, but the struggle for trying to push it in the right place is, one of the key reasons to have this kind of conversation.
Yeah, it's a very interesting conversation, actually. I'll tell you what, if it can do this with food, imagine what it could do with a powerful sort of preacher starting a new religion. Imagine that.
Yeah, I was thinking that, like, as strange as it is, like the internet age, it seems ripe for making a new religion. There's a lot of examples of that, but maybe when you're being followed around by iPhones, it's hard to claim you have miracles. So that may be one.
You're a cynic deep down, I can tell. Very good. Theodore, thank you so much. Nice to talk to you again on another interesting topic. Thank you.
No, thank you. A pleasure, and until the next time.
Until the next time, indeed. Theodore Joya.